And that's Papa Monte Un Bateau by Artiste Independent. And you're listening to Lambie Call, heard every other Monday from 9 to 10 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and streaming live on WBAI.org. And as we said in the news, Guy Philippe, the leader of the paramilitary forces that overthrew President Jean-Bertrand Aristide in 2004, or had a hand in it, was struck a plea deal with the U.S. government and will be sentenced on July 5th. But his real crime he has not been charged with, and that is the murder of Haitian democracy and of hundreds, if not thousands, of Haitians in the bloody 2004 coup d'etat against Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Jeb Sprague is author of the book published by Monthly Review Press, Paramilitarism and the Assault on Democracy in Haiti, and he is just about one of the world's foremost authorities on Guy Philippe. Jeb, welcome to Lambie Call.
Hi, Kim. Before I start, I wanted to say happy May 1st to Lambie Call and to all of your speakers, or all of your listeners.
Well, thank you. We just have closed out a day of May 1st coverage with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash, and we will be talking more about the policies of the Martelly and Jovenel Moïse governments with workers in Haiti later in the show. But we thought we should deal with the Guy Philippe question, since that is definitely one of the headlines in this past week. So tell us, I understand you've been out marching for May 1st as well. But tell us, Guy Philippe, give us a little background on his organization, the FLRN, and how they came about.
Yeah, so the FLRN, it's really the latest phase of modern paramilitarism in Haiti. And what I argue in my book I published is that we really, through this history, we see these changing phases, and now it's the most flexibilized paramilitary group where they go in and out of hiding. And so they started right at the beginning of the century in around 2000, where it was formed by these ex-military and police officials that were involved in narco trafficking. A lot of them wanted to reestablish the military that had been the traditional coercive force in the country. The Haitian military, it was never used to defend the country from outside forces during the 20th century. It was used as an internal force, a force for internal repression. And so when that force was disbanded in 1995 by Jean-Bertrand Aristide, by the Aristide government, a lot of those former paramilitaries and former military men, they were someone in hiding, some were facing judicial proceedings for the first time in the history of the country. There were actually hundreds of cases held against paramilitary, ex-military men, financiers of these different groups. By far the most famous being the Labateau trial, where they were filmed and actually played on Haitian television.
In 2000.
And so in 2000 then, Guy Philippe, he and a few of these other, these far right-wing police chiefs, they leave the country and they go into the Dominican Republic. And we know now from the recent these recent court proceedings that throughout this period he was involved in narco trafficking. Right now, he just signed a guilty plea where he has acknowledged that he received more than $1.5 million and less. That he would directly receive that, or less than $3.5 million, and so somewhere between $1.5 and $3.5 million in bribe payments from drug traffickers. And this was all during this period when the FLRN emerges. So what I found out and what I write about in my book then is that there is a military government clique within the Dominican Republic that start working with the paramilitaries, a number of Haitian far-right neo-duvalieris, some real wealthy individuals who also start backing these this new paramilitary force that forms. And so then between 2001 and the coup in February of 2004, this FLRN is used as this, what we could think of as sort of like a contra force, like, you know, with Nicaragua in the mid-1980s, a similar type of phenomena where they run these raids, these weekly raids into the country, some major attacks. They attacked the Peligre Dam, the main hydroelectric dam there above Port-au-Prince, and that, you know, it's this very destabilizing military intervention or paramilitary intervention that occurs there in the years before the coup. And so Guy Philippe, then, he's like the poster boy that the media is going to. I actually found where he lived in Santo Domingo, a very nice neighborhood. I interviewed Dominican officials that talked about him, going to set parties with him and staying over at their house. And so he had some very powerful connections. But there was another sort of group that actually led the attacks. He was more sort of the poster boy for the paramilitaries. A guy named Joseph Bagadi Jr., Joseph Bagadi Jr., who U.S. Embassy cables talked about as being one of the main behind-the-scenes organizers. And the interesting thing about Joseph Bagadi Jr. is that when Baby Doc dies, he dies at Bagadi Jr.'s home in Port-au-Prince. And Bagadi, his father, Bagadi Sr., was arms procurer for Papa Doc. So we actually, you can see back in this history that a lot of these old Duvalieris dinosaurs, that they're still around, and that these were some of the behind-the-scenes backers of Guy Philippe.
And this was really the second generation. And we're speaking with Jeb Sprague, who teaches at the University of California at Santa Barbara. He's a founder of the Haiti Analysis website and, as we said, the author of Paramilitarism and the Assault on Democracy in Haiti. Is also authoring a series of articles being published presently in French in Haiti Liberté, the Capitalisme de Paramilitaire, and that for French readers is a very interesting series of articles. We're on number 5 now. Roger?
Hi, Jeb. Yeah, it's been pretty obvious to all of us in the progressive camp that the coup d'etat against Aristide was due to an alliance between the imperial powers, the armed forces, the paramilitary forces that you just mentioned, the bourgeoisie, and a slice of the middle class, the higher slice of the middle class in Haiti. Now that what I wanted to ask you is what happened to Guy Philippe in his understanding of his role in the coup, and why seems so stupid, seems so out of touch in the way he considers his forces vis-a-vis the forces of the United States and the bourgeoisie, when he was claiming that he has a book and he was about to reveal names.
Yeah. No, well, it's fascinating. And if you go back and look at it, what he said has changed at different points in time. But after the coup, and, you know, he rolls in there into Port-au-Prince right after Aristide is taken away by U.S. forces in the coup. And then a few days, I think less than a week after, Guy Philippe leaves the capital and he goes to his hometown there, Pestel, in the way far away from the capital. And basically then what I found in 2007, I visited one of these training camps where after the coup, they have set up these private military training camps. They have about half a dozen around the country where they have some of the former ex-army older officials to train young men. And a lot of these men go into private security type jobs. The interesting thing was, though, that they have the black and red Duvalieres flag up behind them. And they have, a real far right-wing ideology to these camps. And so Guy Philippe was close with a lot of the people running this network. And so when you've seen, there's been a few occasions where you have these big marches of these young guys that are calling for the return of the military and they're in the fatigues. Those are the guys that have been at those camps. And there's one right outside of Port-au-Prince that's very nearby. And I have a big piece that you can read about that. And so, I mean, just now for my book and even some information I got after the book came out, we're really shining a light or understanding more clearly what happened then. Some of you might remember, for example, the infamous jailbreak in Gonaïves in 2002. There's never been any article written on this, but it's covered in my book, where I found out through U.S. embassy cables that there was a woman named Janice Elmore, who was a top U.S. intelligence official, probably working for the CIA, maybe the DAI, out of the U.S. embassy, who
the
in DIA, 2002...
Defense yeah, Intelligence Agency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was meeting with Hugh Paris, who was the one of the top financial advisors to Cedros during the de facto regime, and Hugh Paris runs a business out of the Dominican Republic, Haitian elite, far right. And she met with Hugh Paris the day before the Gonaïves jailbreak in Gonaïves and with some other right-wing police officials. And if you read the embassy cable, it's very clear that there was some sort of planning going on. And so there's a whole, what we know, the surface, what we know of history, we just sort of have the surface level understanding of history. But when you are able to uncover, what's going behind the scenes and what elites are talking about, between one another rather than the public pronouncements, you get a deeper understanding of what was really happening and how, powerful forces, what they were doing inside of Haiti. And so I think that whole period, the Fanny Lavalas government, it was a very much a resource-starved attempt to make some reforms in the country, but they were just the death by a thousand cuts. They were being attacked from all sides, and I think now moving forward past the coup, I think we're really seeing a political remaking of the country, alongside a economic restructuring. And so as we see them, after the earthquake, what we could think of as this new shock doctrine, like that Naomi Klein talks about, right? We see a shock doctrine in Haiti where they're opening up more free trade zones, where they're, a huge part of the country is they opened up for mining. And so they're really, trying to open up the country as a stable platform for big transnational companies. And so the political parallel to that then is really marginalizing the popular movements, the grassroots, through a number of strategies, right, that we can see playing out. Election turnout from 60% down to 20% after the earthquake, various tactics to support voter suppression, where people don't know where to vote. There's confusions at the polls. People aren't able to vote. You have a media monopoly. My own, I don't have any direct evidence of this, but I feel it's very likely that U.S. intelligence would be doing things to promote a split within the popular movement. So, you know, how we see different divisions and things. That's why I think really building unity and trying to heal wounds on the left is maybe the most important thing that, could be done in Haiti, because that's those divisions are, that's really what Washington wants.
And we're speaking with Jeb Sprague, author of Paramilitarism and the Assault on Democracy in Haiti. He teaches at University of California, Santa Barbara. Jeb, what is your read of why they've hung Guy Philippe out to dry? Is this a shot across the bow of the Martelly Jovenel Moïse clique to tell them, what, mind your P's and Q's, you know who's boss, and we can come and get you anytime? What do you think?
I think that could be part of it. We can look at other examples in El Salvador and other countries where the U.S. will, you know, support death squads or some, you know, some pretty heinous groups at one period in time, but then they can become an embarrassment, and they want these people to sort of fade away into, you know, someone like Guy Philippe, who has so much negative baggage with him, they don't want him to be the new big senator in the country that's going to be in the media all the time. It really delegitimizes this, what I call this transnationally oriented political project that they try to put in place in these different countries. And so I think he had served a purpose, and maybe in the future, maybe part of this is to sort of, you know, clean him up and get him back out, and they can use him again in the future. I'm not sure. But whatever the case is, there's a lot of names that he's not going to name. He's cutting deals with them. The head of Philippe's political party, Jean-Tel Joseph, right, who's just sworn in as the head of public security under the new regime. So, you know, he's well-connected, popular amongst this far right wing now that has taken over Haiti. But I think the problem, though, that that these groups face and their big backers is that there's such a big part of the population in Haiti that is structurally marginalized, that they're not required by the global economy. And so it's this permanent emergency situation for them, because they're unable to always have the coercive and consensual force to get all of these people to back them. And so they, you know, at different times they have to use paramilitary groups, and other times they're trying to, you know, go a different, a more consensual route. But there's so many people that are marginalized that you know, it's very difficult for them to contain. And so you have these popular movements
just because we don't have much time, I wanted to really round this up myself. In my mind, how do you see, because you're writing about something that might be very important, especially after they announced the withdrawal of the minister troops in Haiti, and you have a new government. What makes them feel so confident that at this point they can arrest one of the minions while they may need those dark forces more and more to do repression in Haiti at this point, when minister is withdrawing and the police is not quite up to par yet? Because I've seen those demos in Haiti. I'm not sure the police is quite ready to handle the masses if they take to the streets. In their plan to think that they can they have to take Guy Philippe out in a situation while they may need more of those paramilitary forces that you've been talking about?
Well, I think it's a sign of their strength, because they have so many other people that they can rely on there. Guy Philippe is only one man. And like I said, I think he was a loose cannon. He was becoming embarrassing, give these radio interviews. You know, they train 25 officers, 125 soldiers in Ecuador who are back there. They have these cohorts of these, you know, guys that have been trained at these Neo-Duvalierist private security camps. So they have a backup reserve force that they already have there. They, you know, haven't brought it out in full to crack down on the popular movement. They're trying to use a police force, but I don't think they necessarily need Guy Philippe. They have other mechanisms within the country to use. And even if MINUSTAH leaves, the U.S. embassy is not leaving. There's still very powerful forces within the country that are still there. So, and now we see them trying to reestablish the army, which would just help them to, further solidify a course of force and make it more legitimate to crack down, like you said, on the popular movement.
I know we're trying to wind this up, but let me just throw out something for both of your consideration. But is it not, though, perhaps some kind of class fight in the elite between the more Makut wing of these forces, which sometimes they summon up to make a coup against Aristide, etc., or versus the group that the U.S. is really backing? We see this Michel-Ange Gédéon, who is kind of like a Mario Andrussol at the head of the police. This is sort of the official U.S. embassy approved force of repression. And they feel that the Makut wing, the wild card rogue wing, the Guy Philippe's, are too much, and they're going to destabilize the Gédéon, and they want to reinforce Gédéon. We see already Jovenel Moïse going after Gédéon, trying to find some ways to nudge him out. I wonder whether it's not this kind of class war at the top.
No, I think that could very clearly be part, definite major factor in this. The different strategies of and different these different factions within within this class, within the local elites, and I think you could also see competition and differences between U.S. intelligence agencies. So I think the DEA probably really wanted to go after Guy Philippe. One reason he might not have been arrested earlier is the CIA might not have put its full support into making that arrest.
Right. It's like Gary Webb series Dark Alliance, where he was pursuing a guy who was at the top of the DEA's most wanted list, and it turned out he was CIA.
You have many forces playing together, and the DEA was waiting in the wings. And after somebody like Miss Sanderson was the ambassador in Haiti, was out of the picture because she, according to Guy Philippe, she guaranteed him that the Americans weren't about to do anything to him. Mm-hmm. If somebody like this leaves the scene, that gives the DEA all the powers and the opportunity to arrest Guy Philippe. But this may be go beyond that. Maybe they feel, because they have made some great success in the last year and a half, that we did a very hard fought against election, and they quote unquote won again. They're putting the institutions of the political institutions in Haiti, they're putting them in place the way they wanted to put them in place for a long time. They may think that they have won the victory, but even though the political parties in Haiti are pretty much destroyed, the power of the people, the masses who can raise in the street, I think will be more important than they think.
Jeb, we would like to go on with you this evening. We need to get you on the show more often, it appears. And thanks very much for your insights and the wrap-up that you've given us, and we hope to get you back in. We've got to do a little bit on International Workers' Day here. And thanks for coming on Lumpy Call.
Okay, merci.
Okay.
Do you?
Okay, bye.